This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. The Mariners leave Los Angeles with a split. 2-2. It felt like Friday night was a great game. The Mariners lost by one run, and they played exceptionally well. They had a bullpen start. They hung in there against Ohtani. J.P. Crawford had an awesome overall weekend. They end up losing Friday night's game after they had the bases loaded. No outs. Top of the eighth with 2, 3, and 4 coming up. Haniger, Seager, and France. They scored no runs. Oh, it was brutal.
Yeah, that was brutal, as was Saturday, where you start off pretty well. Yusei Kikuchi gets hit in the knee, and everything went to hell after that. I mean, my goodness, that thing escalated really quickly, and Kikuchi was looking great. He had 8 strikeouts, and they were all swinging strikeouts.
I have an unflattering thought, and I want to acknowledge before I say it that I realize that I'm an idiot. I'm really relieved that Kikuchi is not injured. I'm really relieved. Like, the best news yesterday was that, hey, not only was it just him being hit in the knee with a one-hopper, but it sounds like the swelling's less severe than they expected. I immediately, once I heard that, wondered why he was rolling around on the ground like he was on Friday night or on Saturday night. Am I the only one? And I realized by saying that, like, there's kind of the question about, because after I saw the replay, I was like, oh, it isn't the knee that got hit with the baseball. It was his other knee, his left knee, that kind of buckled awkwardly as he bent over. And I'm like, that's horrible. And when I saw that Shannon Dreyer's tweet said he left the field kind of unable to put weight on his left leg, I'm like, oh, it's the other leg that's hurt. I was relieved when I found out that it was the knee that got hurt, that got hit with the ball that hurt. And I know it hurts, but then there's part of me that's like, I guess if I'm wondering why he was rolling around, then I'd have to be willing.
Just say it.
I'd have to. It was like he got shot. And I'm glad that everything turned out to be okay, but I wondered how much that hurt.
Was that embellished?
Was it soccer-like?
Some players have different pain thresholds, and given that you had to pull Yusei Kikuchi out of the start a little bit earlier with the back spasms, this might be somebody who has a lower pain threshold than other guys.
So the only fair thing and way to, because we're talking about pain threshold of a professional athlete, which are obviously tougher than other people, is that I'd have to be willing to take a ball batted a one hopper off the ground into my knee. Like, I'd have to be willing to do that.
I mean, that hurts.
And to then say. But anyway, I'm really relieved that you say Kikuchi is okay.
Because he has been your best pitcher. He's been great.
He's been your best pitcher, and it felt like it was just going to be another injury for pitchers.
I know.
At that point, it would have been Justice Sheffield was the only guy that had been not touched by injury yet this season. Only starting pitcher.
Right. I don't know what the number is now, but as far as all the guys that they have had to cycle through since the beginning of the regular season, and all the transactions that I'm sure Jerry DePoto has had to make, maybe just over the last month, I am sure that that number has gotten to a preposterously high amount to the point that we've actually lost track. But you're mad at me this morning, Danny.
I am upset. And that has to do with nothing that happened in yesterday's game where the Mariners salvaged a split. It had nothing to do with all the runs that they scored. And Jared Kelnick did appear in yesterday's game, though he came on as a defensive replacement, did not get an at bat. He's 0 for 38. We've reached the point where it's so uncomfortable. It is profoundly uncomfortable for me to watch him hit. In fact, there were points on Saturday where I was just watching the box score. It's become Mikey's conversation in Swingers. And anybody who's seen Swingers knows Jon Favreau when he's calling and leaving the message and just finding out about the girlfriend. It's just excruciating. Like, stop calling, stop. That's how I feel. And I need someone to blame. It's going to be not you specifically, just people like you.
Oh, just point. Well, then you are blaming me because it's people
like
me. No, it's
just people like you. People like you who last year were wondering, why isn't Kelnick, why is he at the alternate site? Why isn't he hitting at the big league level? How much worse could he be than the guys that are hitting 200 that you have here? Why, Jerry, every week when we talk to Jerry, hey, when's Jared Kelnick going to come up? Do you think he's going to make the team? In spring training, hey, Jared Kelnick's got to make the team. And everybody's like, look, he's 21 years old. He didn't have a minor league season last year. He has a handful a handful of at-bats above a single-A level and wondering why he isn't in the big leagues yet. Like, we're not just putting the cart in front of the horse. We're just assuming, like, hey, this guy should just get there and just he's going to be good, so he's going to be great. And the sooner he gets there, the sooner he's going to be great. And that's not how baseball development works, and we're seeing that firsthand.
I understand your line of thinking here, but he's not going to be better served by going up against AAA pitchers. He's just not.
Has to be better served by going up against AAA batters. Anything would be better than going 0 for 38.
Right.
I mean, it's not historic, but it's getting there. It's 38 straight at-bats, 10 straight games.
I think we're both in agreement that they need to send him down, at least for a little bit of time. But I don't think that this is going to have the potential to ruin him. And a lot of people seem to think that. He should have been up last year at some point. Obviously, the pandemic took place, but he was better than some.
The pandemic.
But at the same time, Danny, he was also better than some of those players.
You can't look at what's happening this year and say he should have been up at some point last year. You can't look at what's happening and think, oh man, he got here for whatever. He doesn't have the skills that they wanted when he got to the big leagues for him to stay in the big leagues. That's probably not going to happen. This is not business as usual.
There are so many, though, sub 200 players on this team, and if he looked better than those guys in spring, which we have heard was the case, then shouldn't he have been up from the get-go?
Absolutely not. His presence in the major league should not depend on what's in front of him in the organization. It should depend on when you feel he's ready to compete at this level. When you feel he has the requisite skill set and the ability to adjust to it, that's when he should be up, not because he's better than what you have at the major league level.
But now that he's up, I mean, you look at him differently because of an 0 for 38 slump. Like, I feel you have to stay true to the process and let him continue to get some experience. And while maybe like a week or so on the AAA level is going to help him out, I mean, I don't look at him as some prospect that all of a sudden is on the verge of being lost. Like, it seems a lot of people are all of a sudden starting to do. I look back at other players who have gone through slumps like this before. This is not complete rarity for a guy that's been this touted to come up and have these kind of struggles. I saw it in Houston in 16 with Alex Bregman.
But the real rarity is that he came up and is having these struggles after having so little minor league experience. That he has gotten here with having virtually no, what is it, 100, is it even 100 at-bats above single A that he's had? I know that last year throws everything off and makes it different, but the thing that's different is that what preceded him getting here and experiencing these struggles was months, if not a year, of people going, hey, is he ready yet? Hey, is he ready yet? Hey, have you thought about bringing Kelenic up? Hey, has everybody got him? And that resulted in him coming up, and whether that had an influence on the Mariners' thinking or not, but you kept poking the thing that was in the oven and coming out to check and say, is it done? And now it's in the oven. And you're like, is this it? Well, I guess we need to put it back in the oven and hope that the thing's not ruined. We need to put it back in the oven because people have been messing with it too much. And you try to shortcut or to game the system or go on instead of letting it fully cook before you took it out.
But if you say you operated differently, say you didn't bring him up now, and that he's still in the minor leagues right now,
and he comes clobbering.
And he has the same struggles. What happens if, and he probably would because he was when he was at the AAA level. What happens if a month later you do the exact same thing and things are theoretically the exact same that they have been at the major league level? Which you definitely have to act like is a possibility, just given the massive gap between AAA baseball and the major leagues these days.
You would know that he had accomplished everything he needed to accomplish in AAA. You would know that he had checked off that box. You would know that, hey, we've seen him go through a slump. At the next highest level, we've seen him get out of that slump. And now you're having to backtrack and figure out. You're having to backtrack and figure out, okay, is the struggles that he's experiencing now, is that something he needs to remedy by going down? Is it something that is, as you've said, this happens, it's not ideal, it's not exactly commonplace, but this isn't so rare that you have to worry about it, that Griffey went 0 for 20, Bregman went 2 for 38, which you pointed out since he got up, all of those things. You would know that, hey, he had enough experience. He had showed us what he needed to show at the AAA level. Right now, you can't say that because he's had a week of baseball there. He's played a week, and take it further, what is it, like 7 weeks that he's had total of not playing in single-A baseball?
Fair, but if he checks all those boxes and then comes up and is the exact same player, then don't you have to uncheck the boxes? I mean, if that's the way that it goes, then you kind of find yourself back right where you would where we find ourselves right now, right? If that happens, I mean, that's what I wonder about. I don't know how much the alternate training site and AAA really did for him. Jerry DePoto clearly had an idea of how many between those two, and we don't have the official statistics from the alternate training site, but between that and AAA, about how much seasoning he thought that he needed before he came up onto the major league team. And he has shown that he belongs in glimpses. They have been glimpses, and the glimpses are a long time ago, which I can understand would be a reason to send him down. And I think, again, after this weekend and the strikeout numbers that have increased, it's hard to fathom why they wouldn't at some point. And I wonder if Jerry DePoto is changing his line of thinking from his visit with us this past Thursday, where he says, well, look, the walk rate's good and the strikeout rate isn't terrible. This is what we've been looking for. And then he talks about the batting average on balls in play, which is a stat that basically measures luck for where those balls land for Jared Kelnick.
Is there a flaw in process here? Or is it just a matter of not getting the results you want? Because I think that's what we're going back and forth about.
I think it's the latter. I think it's you're just not getting the results that you want. But I feel like the best process for any eventually great athlete, they're going to figure it out or they're not. So why not put them up there with the big boys? And if that is something that ruins
their confidence, why bring them up? If you have that rationale, why ever have minor league baseball? Like, if that's the rationale, or why have so many tiers of minor league baseball? If it's going to be, hey, you'll eventually figure it out, why do we have all of these different layers of it?
They have been part of the institution for a really long period of time. But there are certain guys that you just view differently than the average player in those systems. And he happens to be one of them. And I just don't subscribe. Well, look, if he's ruined confidence-wise by a slump like this, then he was never going to be good, period, you know?
I look at this and think it's a flaw in process, and that if anything, we're guilty of hoping and wanting Kelnick to develop on the timeline we hoped, rather than sitting and observing and saying, okay, he's done it at each and every level and he's moved through it. And that is impacted by an unprecedented situation where you did not have a minor league year last year. I'm sure that it's complicated some by the way Jared felt about his own development path and how much he's pushed and felt he's ready. And not that Jared's calling his own shot, because he's certainly not. But somebody, when you've got a player saying, and he's ready to go and very aggressively and talking to USA Today about it, that definitely, I think we're guilty a little bit here of letting hope get in the way of, no, you've got to see observable results before you do it.
I think that's fair.
But maybe I should be mad at myself for not yelling at you more earlier about being so excited to have him here. Maybe that's,
I'm still excited.
Maybe I'm transferring too much of it, instead of saying, like, look, are you guys happy now? Are you happy? If he goes back down, now we shut up and let's not do this again with Julio Rodriguez. Like,
oh,
I'm mad.
Julio, bring him up. Yeah, let's go.
No, that's not the reality from that. This should not be like, oh, yeah. No, take it easy. Take it easy. Make sure he checks all the boxes before you bring him up.
It's been 20 years. I want relevance.
But you didn't get relevance with this. You got a quick buzz, and now you've got a mess, and you're hoping it's not a collapsed cake.
Messes can be
cleaned up. You're
hoping
it's not collapsed. You're hoping that you can put it back in the oven and it'll still come out fine.
Ooh, it's a cake? What kind of cake?
Yes, it's absolutely a cake. And you've been opening the oven and poking on it to see if it's done and putting a toothpick in the middle and saying, like, oh, there's still some batter there. I think it needs to be in. And because you kept messing with the oven, because you kept pulling it out and asking DePoto, is it done? Is it done? Are we ready to eat it? They gave in and they pulled it out a little bit soon. And now we're going to have to put it back in the oven. And I hope you're happy.
I'm not the reason that they made this move. Come on. They did not listen to me.
It's not you specifically. Like I said, it's people like you. It's Danny and Gallant. It's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
What's up, Maura?
Why do you have to serve us undercooked cake, Paul?
I mean,
what's the best kind of cake?
The batter's okay, right?
What is it? Well, no, actually, the batter is clearly where the problem is. The batter is 0 for 38.
Batter?
Like, the batter is definitely an issue. Best kind of cake? Yellow cake with chocolate frosting? Angel food cake? I think I go angel food.
My mom makes a homemade vanilla cake, just a yellow cake with vanilla. That's great. And recently, what she did for my stepfather's birthday was on the inside, she put this pineapple glaze in the middle of it. Oh, my God. It was so good. Mm-hmm. I am a really big fan of carrot cake. And a lot of
I was going to say, I have a hot take. That's my favorite cake.
Veggie people go so crazy over it. And the idea, you guys are missing the point. It is like the most moist cake that there is. I know some people are made uncomfortable by that word. Carrot cake is like a next level of the inside is just so good. It's
so good.
I agree
with you on a food take for once, Paul.
There we go. How about you, Danny? What's your favorite cake?
Angel food cake.
Angel food cake.
That's a good one, too. See, I like all cake.
Oh, love angel food cake. My grandma, lovely, lovely lady, Patsy, she 12 egg angel food cake, and she swore she could taste it if you did not hand beat the eggs.
Wow.
If you used a mixer. Yeah, she swore you could taste the difference.
Okay, interesting.
All right, guys, first up, Juwan James, if you remember him, the tackle who was cut by the Broncos after suffering a season-ending injury away from the facility, has filed a grievance against the Broncos seeking $15 million. In his claim, he hints at collusion between the team and the league and claims that the Broncos facilities were not in compliance with Colorado COVID-19 guidelines. And this just gets even more complicated as Adam Schefter just reported moments ago that he signed a 2-year deal worth up to $9 million with the Ravens this morning.
Okay. Good for Juwan James. He's going to get an opportunity to play. This is going to be a fascinating test case. And the NFL better be prepared, and the Broncos better be prepared to show that they were fully compliant with all of those guidelines.
The latter part is a throw-in, and it almost has nothing to do with the injury, but you throw it in there because you assume that you're going to be able to find some fault in the Broncos here.
If you're going to say, hey, you're going to be a stickler about this, so I'm going to be a stickler about it, and if you're going to say you were training at a place that you didn't have to be at, I'm going to say, well, I couldn't train at your place to get ready for my job because it wasn't fully safe.
Classic lawyering.
Yeah.
That's a good play.
You know what? This is one case where, like, let them lawyer each other to death. Mm-hmm. Like, each side, like, usually we're all in support of the idea that you don't want to pay, like, lawyers can muck things up. Like, in this case, just let them lawyer each other to death.
Do you buy into the idea of collusion between the team and the league? I do.
There is no doubt that the NFL wanted more than anything for the Broncos or for any team to draw a hard line when it came to this stuff and scare the bejesus out of every other player that was training on their own. And to say, like, oh, my God, if I get hurt on my own, I might not get paid. But if I'm at their facility, I will. Okay, I'm going to go do the voluntary stuff at their place. There's no doubt about that.
Oops, sorry. Packers CEO Mark Murphy wrote in his monthly column for Packers.com, "The situation we face with Aaron Rodgers has divided our fan base. The emails and letters that I've received reflect this fact. As I wrote here last month, we remain committed to resolving things with Aaron and want him to be our quarterback in 2021 and beyond. We are working to resolve the situation and realize that the less both sides say publicly, the better." And then he went on for about three paragraphs to talk up Brian Gutekunst, the GM.
I love this. I absolutely love this. It's politician. Like, he's being called upon to be a politician, right? And you're going to have to grab the third rail of team's most important player who does not like his team right now and try and bridge the gap between the two. But what Mark Murphy said, the less you say, the better. Oh, by the way, the GM that he wants fired isn't going anywhere. Like, that's what that says to me.
And he was so complimentary of Gutekunst. As Maura pointed out, I mean, it really is like a long answer describing why the guy's good. You don't see that with Rodgers. And if I'm Rodgers, and I'm taking insult to them drafting a quarterback in the first round, why wouldn't I take insult or feign that I'm insulted by the idea that they would not say the same glowing words about me?
See, I don't even think it's that way. I think it's like, hey, we know Aaron wants him fired, and we're not firing him. Read between the lines here. Like, that's what I think is going on. It's like, we want Aaron back. We don't want to talk about Aaron and all of the issues he has, but we're not firing that dude.
On Friday, the Seahawks gave everyone's favorite Aussie, punter Michael Dixon, a 4-year extension that includes $14.5 million in new money that can get up to $16 million.
Did I miss when Dixon got a tattoo sleeve on his arm? Did you see the pictures from it?
I did
not. The punter's got a tattoo sleeve now. And it looked, it's not like barbed wire variety or mixed martial arts style. Like it looks like flowery, like it's pretty. But he's got a tattoo sleeve. I love Dixon. I thought there was too much made of him when he was drafted, and everybody like, oh, it's, I'm like, he's a punter. Like, slow your roll about all the dynamic roles and what he's able to do. He's a really good punter. He's really good.
At my last job, I had a friend who's a diehard UT fan who is obsessed with Michael Dixon, and it was the same kind of, why are you trying to push me into this cult? It's a punter. I don't care.
Punter. He's a good punter.
There is nothing worse, Danny, than having a great punter. For Pete Carroll,
because
that means that you are marrying yourself to the idea that special teams is going to trump a lot more often than it should an offense that has the kind of firepower that this Seahawks offense has. So I'm happy for Michael Dixon. He's a great punter, probably the best in the game. This is not necessarily good news.
If you wanted the best punter for Pete Carroll to have is one who boots it 65 yards every time it hits his foot. One who just crushes the ball but has no touch. No touch. So if you're at midfield, like Pete's like, well, I'd love to punt here, except this guy's going to kick it into the sixth row.
Yeah.
So I can't punt. I have to go for it. Like that would be the – I did not think about that. This is just going to encourage Pete to punt more.
Yeah.
Right. Jalen Ramsey got on Twitter to react to the Julio Jones trade, tweeting, I'm going to have myself a good Sunday, but this is all it took for a generational guy, and we were out of the Julio sweepstakes? Wow, we would have been unstoppable for real with all them weapons.
You know what? Trade him. You can't have that kind of dissension. The Rams, if the Rams don't just deal, they should cut him. They should cut his butt today. If you're going to get on Twitter and make those kind of second-guessing remarks, you're a cowardly organization if you do not release him by the transaction wire today.
They're so top-heavy. look, they would have to do some real book cooking to do it, and I know that. I mean, I'm convinced the Rams are guilty of tax evasion. So
no, dude, you need to characterize this as a question of organizational control. We're going to try to influence the Rams to cut him. By making them seem like cowards.
Oh, okay. I figured you were going for that play right there. If I'm on the Rams, I would be questioning Les Snead, period. Their GM. I have no idea how he's still there. Like, I don't get it. I understand, like, they made it to a Super Bowl and all that. But, I mean, they haven't had a first-round pick in years. They are definitely cooking the books. Like, I don't buy that they are under the salary cap.
It's Danny Gallant. That is Around the NFL. Hopefully solutions to all of the different problems and maybe exaggerated some for a couple of NFC contenders. The Mariners in Detroit today. We'll tell you what to look ahead to and also look at where Seattle is without Julio Jones. That's next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Apparently, I think of young baseball prospects as a cake. Perhaps even a souffle, something that must be handled delicately. You must not interrupt the baking process. There can be no checking. You should not even walk in the kitchen while the prospect is being cooked for fear that it might collapse. And that is my fear with Jared Kelnick. And Paul, you brought up the point of why do we treat baseball prospects with such kid gloves?
In the NFL or NBA, there's a theory that you can throw young players into the fire, and if they're talented, they will generally figure it out at some point. Not entirely something that's separated from environment when it comes to some of these young players. I think you could point at quarterbacks specifically, though, as in those two sports, the one position where maybe you can be a victim of your environment and maybe you can't figure it out if you're just thrown in there. But I think if you're any other position in football or any position in basketball, we will see that you either have it or you don't. And we'll see it pretty quickly. Baseball, it does seem different. And this idea that you can ruin a prospect by putting him in the majors too quickly, why is it different in this sport? To me, I have a hard time buying into that idea.
I got a couple theories. The first one is that baseball, because it's a sport where failure is so frequent and it's baked into the game, that you have to learn to deal with that. And at some point when you get to the major leagues, when you get to the highest level, you're going to deal with more failure than you've dealt with ever before in your career. Everybody will. You will deal with more failure in the big leagues. And because players who have gotten to that point have probably experienced less failure along the way, that learning to deal with that, you need to see guys fail and regroup and figure out how to succeed after failing. That's a skill. Getting out of a slump is a skill. The second part of it, and this only just occurred to me, it's a different game, right? Like, baseball's more as much craft or activity as it is football or basketball.
What do you mean,
right?
What do you mean craft activity?
That it's hand-eye coordination, there's technique, picking up a curveball, like all of those different things, that it's not about raw athleticism.
There's technique in all those sports, though. There's technique in having a jump shot. There's technique in blocking somebody or in tackling somebody as well.
Yes, but athleticism matters more in those sports. Athleticism plays a higher factor in success in football and basketball than it does in baseball, especially when it comes to hitting. There are other things, and certainly defense, athleticism, and your speed and your raw physical tools. But hitting a baseball is as much craft. I've always said it's as much trade as it is sport.
Don't you want then the trade to happen at the highest possible level and challenge a guy with something that is major league caliber, as opposed to letting him have the training wheels on for a year? I mean, eventually you got to take him off. And I feel like failure's good in a way in baseball, in that when you have that experience at first, you are going to learn from it. The thing is, though, I don't think by protecting a player, you are going to make it more likely for that guy to have the ability to handle that failure. I think you either can or can't. And that's why I feel like the process is perhaps exaggerated of, oh, he's going to be able to handle failing a little bit better a year from now than he is now.
See, that's the part where I disagree. The part, the idea that, hey, you have to take the training wheels off. Yes, you do at some point. When he's demonstrated and shown that he has mastery of all of the different components that it takes to be successful at the major league level. And that's the reason why there are so many tiers of minor league development, not because of tradition or institutional sort of, but because it is an accumulation of skills that gets you to the point where, okay, you now have everything you need to be able to succeed at the major league level. And that will happen earlier for better players than it will for guys who are more journeymen, but there is an accumulation of skills. And saying like, oh, because at 19, this guy is one of the most talented players that we've ever seen with the best skill set, doesn't mean that you just say, hey, he'll figure it out. He'll eventually get there. He still needs to go through all the rungs. He may develop through those at a quicker clip, but that you can't just skip all of those different things. And if you start holding out guys like, oh, well, Juan Soto was able to do it. Oh, Ken Griffey Jr. was able to do it. Well, then you're holding up if he's not Ken Griffey Jr. and not as good as Ken Griffey Jr., he could still be a hell of a player. Saying, hey, he might be the next prodigy, so let's just throw him in there. I think that's a recipe to have guys thrown in where they get in over their head and they don't have the skills or the resiliency they need to succeed.
If you do have that belief that they can be that guy, though, they should be able to handle it. And I think that with Kelnick, it is someone that we've seen personality-wise, which I imagine probably factored into their decision to decide to move him up as quickly as they did. He is exceptionally confident. I'm sure he is livid with himself and perhaps shaken on that side of things. But when he has been showing this for the entirety of his baseball playing career, I feel like there is an ability to get that back. And I just don't feel like you can. I feel like this individual exception is one that you look at and say, yes, the results are definitely not what you want right now. But if you're of the belief that he's ever going to be that guy, he just has to work through them.
If you send him down now, does that mean you brought him up too soon, though? Doesn't it? By definition, I think it means. If their goal was, hey, when he comes up, we want him to stick up here. And he goes back down. It doesn't mean it's foiled and, hey, it's never going to work out. And maybe I do have too much of a doomsday scenario. But if he goes back down, it means that you brought him up too soon.
I don't know. I think that's subjective, right? I mean,
well, but he's up now and he can't hit. And if you send him back down, it means you brought him up too soon.
I feel like bringing him up was a smart play. You gave him a taste. Long term, that's big for, I think, the organization, just given the commentary that he probably was buying into, given the Kevin Mather comments. So in a way, it helps you on that front. Hey, man, this is what the major leagues are.
He doesn't feel like, hey, you've been holding me back and I could have done this 3 months ago. Whereas if he comes up and hits the cover off the ball, everybody's happy. But he's also feeling like, yeah, I could have done this last year if you guys hadn't held me back.
Right. So, I mean, in a way, there's a small victory there. And then afterwards, okay, well, it's not working out right now, that's for sure. But he was going to go up against major league pitching for a first time at some point. And whether or not it's a success, that I don't think is necessarily relevant. It's about just getting those at-bats and being able to learn from them.
Do you think that this is a situation where him struggling at the major league level does no long-term harm? Or do you think him struggling at the major league level, this part is a necessary step?
To the first question, I don't think it will in this specific example, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I can, you know, I can be talked into this idea that baseball players, because of what you were laying out, like the skills and all these different things, you're right. It is not based off of athleticism. That's how we see some hefty fellas that are so good at the sport, like a Pablo Sandoval or a Bartolo Colon or something like that. But I think simultaneously, those players, you should know whether or not this guy has a probable chance of being able to fight through this at the major league level.
See, I look at it and say, I hope there's no long-term harm. And I recognize that I might be overreacting in that regard and fearing that he's been ruined or that this has been too much too soon or that something about the process has now, the process by which he's been introduced to the major leagues is going to have long-term repercussions. But I definitely feel like he came up too soon because, and I'll group myself in here with this some way, we were all hoping that he could be that rather than looking at it and saying objectively based on what we've seen from him, we had not seen enough at the minor league level. We had not seen enough sustained performance at higher levels of minor league baseball to warrant his inclusion, promotion to the big leagues. It is Danny and Gallant. We'll raise flags. That's coming up next.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
We got a pretty good text. It says here, according to Danny, baseball is as much a trade as a sport. Also, according to Danny, soccer is not a sport. Fair criticism. Fair criticism coming from the 757.
Soccer involves more athleticism.
I've always wondered, if you took the best players that we have in baseball...
No, we're going football and basketball.
Basketball and football. Basketball and
football.
Maybe
some sprinters.
You said, for 1 year, we will give you the pick of the entire range of athletes that we have in those two sports and train for soccer. Would they win the World Cup?
Just for that many years? No, they would not.
1 year.
No,
they wouldn't.
They would get killed.
No, because the soccer players. But say it was a sport like team handball or volleyball. Could you win an Olympic gold medal in volleyball if you gave 1 year with the best male athletes, the best men's basketball players and football players?
I don't want to offend because there's a lot of volleyball on the West Coast. There's not any men's volleyball on the East Coast anywhere. So, I don't know. Honestly, maybe. I mean, if you have guys who are like 6'10" that are playing basketball and now they're playing volleyball instead, probably be a little bit of an advantage.
I feel like they'd have a shot. How about speed skating?
I don't know about that one.
I think you'd be able to dominate. Like, that's just exercise.
No, it's a little.
No, it's just exercise. It's just exercise.
Come on, that's disrespecting all the great hockey skaters that are out there, too.
Well, but they play hockey. I'm just talking about just skating. just skating. Shouldn't you be able to beat the Dutch? And there's not like a huge global contingent of speed skating powerhouses.
I suppose.
All right, time to raise flags. After that inanity, should I go first?
Go ahead.
I'm going to raise a flag to Weston McKennie. You might say, who is Weston McKennie? Well, Weston McKennie is the man who scored the equalizer last night for the U.S. men's national team in the CONCACAF Nations League, in which the U.S. beat Mexico. He also was seen as being one of the more feistier fellows in the midst of several scraps with Mexico. I think I got a new favorite men's national team player. He's played in the Bundesliga, Paul. You're a fan of the Bundesliga.
Bundesliga!
He's played overseas primarily, was born in Texas. I think I've got a new favorite men's national team player. And yeah, good old USA.
Okay.
Pulisic scores on a penalty kick. We had a save of a penalty kick by the U.S. goalkeeper.
Soccer Danny is here.
That's right. And we beat Mexico. Hated Mexico. Bring him back. Bring him back the antagonism.
I'm glad. I mean, most people
Hogarth with the save.
Most people know you as, you know, the most, I would say, seasoned talker of soccer in this city. So yeah, you know what? Like I'm all about this. Most people listen to you and they're like, yeah, you know what? This guy, he gets soccer.
I like soccer. I just like making fun of soccer more than I actually like soccer. It's not that I dislike it. I just like making fun of soccer, mostly because of how much they howl. Soccer fans are sensitive. They are sensitive.
You know, though, I would ask, and you are a big fan of martial arts.
Yeah, some MMA.
Their fans are, I think, just as sensitive.
MMA fans?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yes. Very much so.
Their fans are more of a hair trigger. My brother, I took him to an event at the Tacoma Dome, and afterwards his observation was, I loved it. When he said this, he goes, dude, you could start a fight here without ever saying a word.
Yep.
He's just like, look at someone hard for 10 seconds and you'd be going.
They want to fight you if you make fun of their sport.
Or their affliction t-shirts.
We got to stop those. If you have one.
I think they're pretty much done.
Deserve making fun of.
Yeah,
they're awful.
Ed Hardy, bro.
Paul, what do you got?
I'm throwing a flag at Ezekiel Elliott. I don't like bad dog owners. And I think that when you look at Ezekiel Elliott now and there's a track record of three separate incidents where his dog has done something that is bad, you got to start looking at the actual owner itself. So Ezekiel Elliott had three dogs boarded at a dog boarding place. The person who was in charge of supervising the dogs took them outside, and one of Ezekiel Elliott's dogs suddenly attacked, seized his right arm, clamped down, and threw him to the ground. Elliott's been sued once before for an alleged attack by this very same Rottweiler, and earlier this year another incident occurred when the dogs allegedly attacked two people while running loose. Bad dog owners will consistently tell you that, oh, you just don't get the dog, oh, the dog's fine. It's a wild animal, and if you own a dog, you have a responsibility to actually train it so that it can be amongst society. And if not, you better keep that thing inside because it has no place in society. And I feel like there are too many people out there that have bad dogs and excuse the bad behavior that get away with it. It bothers me. I love dogs, but I feel like there are a lot of people who are not anywhere close to equipped to handle dogs.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Oh, that's tough.
Well, and I believe his other dogs are bulldogs, which was even weirder to me because they're not really known as an attack dog. So if they're attacking people, it does make you question whether he's training these dogs to be mean.
Mm-hmm. Maura, what do you got?
I'm going to end on a good note here. On Friday, I raised my flag for Greg Olson and his son TJ as he was heading into surgery to get a new heart. And he made it out of surgery okay, and Greg Olson posted this adorable message of TJ thanking everyone on Twitter.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for thinking of me. Thank you for praying with me. Congrats. I hope you have all the wins. We love you guys. Bye.
Oh,
that's cute.
So very
that's
good
awesome.
News there. Hopefully he keeps recovering well and everything goes smoothly.
Best wishes, best thoughts go out to young TJ.
Yeah.
It was a relief and inspiring to hear. Greg Olson had announced a couple weeks ago that TJ, who had battled a heart condition from the time he was born, his coming to the end of his of that heart and its ability to be used, and they found a donor. So that's really, really great to hear. And our best thoughts to him and his family and to TJ. That's adorable.
Yes, it is. That was cute.
That's going to do it for us. Paul is going to be a great shepherd for you for the next week. Our thanks to Brock Heward. It was great to talk to him. The Professor John Clayton for the Morning Drive. Maura Dooley, who is the shepherd who keeps us on the straight and narrow. And he is Paul Gallant. Don't trust him with a cake. Do not trust him with a cake. Well, he'll keep checking it, seeing if it's done, putting his finger in the batter and trying to, why don't we just put this now? It's better than anything else we're going to eat. He might end up ruining it.
You definitely don't want to trust me with a can of frosting, because I will eat the whole can of frosting. And he is Danny O'Neill, and he's blaming me for all of Jared Kelnick's struggles. I don't think that's cool. Oh, wait. People like me. The question for the Paul Gallant Show coming up. In the NFL and the NBA, there's a theory, if you throw young players into the fire, that if they're talented, they will generally figure it out. Baseball, it seems different. Why is it different? Why can you rush a player too early and you might end up ruining him, to quote Brock Heward? You get to answer that next. It's the most interactive sports talk show in Seattle. So long, farewell. You'll hear Danny and I tomorrow at 7.